Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing our graduates to hit the ground running.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. There was a time, they say, when preteen and young teen girls met their thirst for romance and adventure by reading Anne of Green Gables or writing poems in secret diaries. Nowadays, American girl culture comes in an avalanche of remarkably racy books and TV shows and remarkably public web networking. This world is much racier, meaner, and edgier than what their parents, no innocence, grew up on. Are the girls all right? This hour on Point, the media battle for the hearts and minds of America's teen and preteen girls. Joining me right now from Brooklyn in New York is Cecily Vonsegaser. She's creator of the Gossip Girl book series, which is now a hit TV show in its second season. She also created two spinoff series, The It Girl and Gossip Girl, The Carlyles. Cecily, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
With me in the studio is Addie Schwartz, creator of the Beacon Street Girls series of books, which more or less bills itself as a healthy antidote to the world of Gossip Girl. Addie Schwartz, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And finally, from Silver Spring, Maryland, we're joined by Jean Brooks Gunn. She's co-director of the National Center for Children and Families at Teachers College. Jean, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
Before we get started, let's listen to just a little opening snippet of theme music of the TV series based on the books by our guest Cecily, Gossip Girl. It kind of sets the tone.
Where is she being, Serena?
And who am I? That's not a secret I'll never tell. You know you love me. XOXO, Gossip Girl.
Gossip Girl, set in the upper East Side of New York, very ritzy setting, kind of private school and all that jazz. Here's the second paragraph of the book, Gossip Girl, as read by actor Christina Ricci, basically establishes who this book is about and the kind of lives they lead.
Welcome to New York City's Upper East Side, where my friends and I live and go to school and play and sleep, sometimes with each other. We all live in huge apartments with our own bedrooms and bathrooms and phone lines. We have unlimited access to money and booze and whatever else we want. And our parents are rarely home, so we have tons of privacy. We're smart. We've inherited classic good looks. We wear fantastic clothes, and we know how to party.
And we know how to party. Now, I'm not sure how this happened. I just had, recently, Candace Bushnell, the creator of Sex and the City. That interview was kind of a train wreck. I'm not sure what's bringing me back into this terrain. But these are our girls, and they're being raised in some kind of wild environment. Jean Brooks Gunn, we're going to hear from Cecily and Addie here with two different approaches. But how do you look at what's going on with the books and media that's being pushed to young American women, girls, preteens these days?
Tom, a couple issues that I think are important. The first is that media portrayals of girls have existed for as long as we've had media. What's particularly interesting about Gossip Girls is we're looking at a segment of America that virtually none of the girls watching this show can ever imagine living at the high-income lifestyle of the girls on the Upper East Side that are being portrayed. So when you think about it, you can think about it as a fantasy program in large degree because girls know that they are not living like these girls. That's one. Second issue is, for me, more of an issue of the overwhelming amount of media exposure that our kids are getting, both girls and boys. We know from our research that kids spend 5 to 7 hours a day with electronic media. That is basically as much time as they're spending in school. So my concern is not looking at one particular show like Gossip Girls. It's looking at the cumulative hours or the content of shows that kids are watching. So would I be worried if my daughter were watching Gossip Girls and she was watching it 1 hour a week and wasn't watching any other shows? Probably not. Would I worry if my daughter were watching 40 to 50 hours a week of primetime TV and being saturated by sexual messages and alcohol messages and drug messages? Yes. So I want to take a slightly more nuanced view in terms of looking at what the overall content is, not just this particular show, although I know we want to talk about this particular show.
Well, it's just kind of, it's a talking point, and it's a starting point, and it's incredibly popular right now, not just in Cecily's books, and between them and the series Click and Gossip Girl and A-List, nearly 14 million out there. Gossip Girl, number one on the New York Times bestseller list, but also on TV. Let's just have a sense for people who may not know that show. Hear from Gossip Girl on TV. Former best friends Serena and Blair discuss whether they can remain friends after, and remember, this is set in high school, after Serena has slept with Blair's boyfriend and kept it a secret.
I thought everything was good between us.
It was. Before I found out you had sex with my boyfriend.
How'd you find out?
Nate told me. At least he felt he owed it to me to tell the truth.
I don't know what to say.
Don't bother saying anything. I wouldn't believe you anyway.
Blair, it was...
You know, I always knew you were a whore. I never took you for a liar, too.
Gossip Girl, the TV show. Cecily Von Zegezer is with us. She's creator of the books. I'm sorry, Cecily. Tell us what you set out to do here and how you see it being received, I guess very enthusiastically, but what you make of that as the author of Gossip Girl, the original.
Well, for me, it's very important to separate the show from the books because the show, I guess the pilot was, you know, based on the first book, but after that, the material kind of just veers off into a completely different area, and I'm not involved in the writing of the show. But the setup, the relationship between Blair and Serena and Nate is very faithful to that, the books. But all of that, the talk about sex and drinking and, you know, designer clothes, for me, it's very much, you know, their bark is worse than their bite. They're talking a lot about it in the books. There aren't very many instances at all. I think there are maybe three in the course of 10 books of the characters actually having sex. And when they do, they're 17 in the book, so they're a year older than they are in the show. They're seniors in high school in the books. And when they are having sex, they've been in a relationship for a long time, they're in love, and they practice safe sex, and I don't have a problem with that. For me, it was really important to show 17-year-olds doing the things that 17-year-olds really do.
Addie Swartz, how about it? You've come at this from a different angle. Cecily says, look, there's more sex, drinking, and designer clothes in the atmosphere than in reality in Gossip Girl, though, boy, it's always around. And that's the milieu, that's the culture that girls are being introduced to and eating it up, you know, right across the country. Very popular books, very popular show. With the Beacon Street Girls, with the Beacon Street Girls series, you've got a different kind of goal and tone.
Absolutely, Tom. You know, girls today are bombarded by media from all angles. They're watching all kinds of screens, TV, computer screens, cell phones, iPads, and there's sex and violence and, you know, the new thing, frenemies, which is, you know, are you a friend? Are you an enemy? Are you some combination? The overall feeling is that there's just too much too soon for these girls to handle. You know, 9 to 13 is a very impressionable age.
That's what your books are focused on.
And while maybe the Gossip Girl series is aimed a little older, with the TV show and access to books and reading, girls, you know, this message is getting trickled down to girls that just may not be able to handle some of the messages that are out there.
So you've got a different goal in your stories. You're deliberately setting out to put up positive models for the girls who are reading. Do girls want that? Do they read it?
The girls love the series. I will say first and foremost that while our numbers don't look quite as good, we've sold 700,000 books. For most of our life, we've been independent publishers, so we've not had the luxury of a large company like Little Brown promoting our series. But girls absolutely love our books, and when they find them, they feel like they can find something of themselves in there. We're not talking about, sugarly sweet, overly perfect girls. Each one of our characters has problems and issues, and our goal is to make it fun and cool and hip, but to offer healthy role models and positive messages that really can make a difference to them and help them navigate adolescence.
So when you look at Gossip Girl, and Cecily points out that the TV show has kind of taken it away from the book, but the book's pretty racy,
Is this a natural progression from your preteens to what they're talking about? Is this friend, enemy, frenemy? How do you look at the message, at the content of Gossip Girl?
Well, I feel like we are between American Girl and Gossip Girl. And the problem is that, you know, you play with dolls and then suddenly you're forced into the messages that Gossip Girl and Click and a bunch of other media, not just...
Click is another girls series, kind of the preteen version of the Racy track.
But it's not just these things. It's messages on billboards. It's on, you know, video. It's on the internet. It's everywhere. So it's not just, you know, literature per se, although, you know, there are these examples of what is called young adult literature that tries to be racier, getting some of these messages out there.
And there you stand in that gap between toys and boys, between toys and boys. I think you put it somewhere. But I really wonder if parents know what is in Gossip Girl, if they endorse it, if they know it's there, but they say, well, this will just get our teen girls ready for what's out there in this country. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Just a little bit more from the show. Very popular on the CW network. Here's Serena, hesitant to tell her friends a big secret, and they take turns reminding her of their not-so-proud moments.
Dan puts me on a pedestal. If he knew the truth, he would never look at me again.
You're starting to scare even me. What did you do? Come on, you can tell us.
We've seen you with vomit in your hair, making out with investment bankers in the men's room at PJ Clark's. You don't have to hide anything from us.
She's right, Serena. I mean, none of us are saints.
Yeah, I had sex with him in the back of a limo.
Several times.
I had sex with you at a wedding while I was her date.
Okay, and off we go. Gene, help us here. Who's watching this, and what does it mean to a teen, a preteen, a young teen girl to have, you know, vomit in her hair and making out with investment bankers in the men's room? And right on. Who's watching? What does it mean to teens?
Teen girls who are watching it, again, realize that this is not their life.
But it's the life they're watching. I mean, this is a long way from Anne of Green Gables. I know it's not 1956 anymore. But still, you're the professor of child development. What does it mean to a girl when that's the storyline, even if it's in a... I mean, we've got some very positive reviews of this. Janet Maslin in The New Yorker actually really loves Cecily's book. She says they're transgressive fairy tales. But still, this is the storyline. This is the stuff of show after show and book after book. What's the implication of that for child development?
Well, there are two implications. One is if you watch a lot of this kind of show, not just Gossip Girls, and you're bombarded with these messages 40, 50, 60 hours a week, then we have a problem because we know from some of our research on electronic media, the kids who watch a lot of TV with a lot of sexual content, and it's not just Gossip Girls, those girls are slightly more likely to start having sex earlier. But it's a cumulative effect of watching a lot of TV. So what it really raises is who controls the amount of saturation that kids get. Is it going to be society? Is it going to be the parents, the poor beleaguered parents who are trying to control electronic media in the home? So how are we going to control the vast amount of it, again, versus just this one show? The second point I'm going to twist it a little bit because I'll be interested to see what your listeners think. When we go back to the books, because we've got the two authors here on the radio station, the books are getting kids to read. And right now, our studies show that kids read for pleasure less than 10 minutes a day. And so part of me as an educator says, gee whiz, if I can get the kids to be reading anything for pleasure for more than 10 minutes a day to increase literacy skills, that's going to make me happy. So in a way, I like to separate out personally the reading, the literacy piece from the electronic media, the kind of overwhelming number of hours that all of us, not just our kids, but all of us are exposed to electronic media.
Yeah, but
so
but
you can decide how you feel about that.
Right. I mean, we need them to read, so whatever they'll read, no matter how down and dirty, that's better than otherwise. I want to put that to our creators here, but we've got a library volunteer calling in, Maura in Arlington, Massachusetts. What do you see? What do you think, Maura? Hello, Maura. Are you there? Maura. Well, let's go to another call. Beverly, Massachusetts. Tim. Tim, you're on the air. Hi, Tim. Yeah, for some reason, they're not popping up. Well, Addie's right here waving at me. Addie, what do you say?
As a parent, one has to ask, you know, what are the subliminal messages that our children are absorbing? Kids are sponges, face it. And a recent Duke study showed that there was a positive correlation between reading our books, the Beacon Street Girl books, and losing weight. And what's exciting about this research is that it proves that the media that kids consume is as important as the foods they eat.
Now, why would reading your Beacon Street Girls books mean losing weight?
Well, one of our books, because we deal with different areas of adolescence, focuses on one character, Chelsea Briggs, who is borderline obese, and follows the trials and tribulations of her through this school camping trip.
Okay.
But why it's important is to show that it is important what you're reading. And while reading is good, and kids aren't reading enough, what you read can impact behavior in a positive way. Stanford University did a study in 2001 which showed a direct correlation in TV and video game consumption and aggressive behavior. And they actually showed that by reducing consumption to under 7 hours a week for 20 weeks, verbal aggression and physical aggression decreased by 70 and 40%. So it is really important what your kids are absorbing.
So not just that you read, but what you read. I think we've got our library volunteer back. Maura, are you there?
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Maura. What do you see?
Well, I see young girls, really interested in reading until about the age of fourth grade, fifth grade, it starts to drop off.
Third grade is pretty early to drop off. You'd hope it was just kicking in, but even so, okay.
Third grade, they're still quite interested. Fourth and fifth grade, they don't want the books that we have to offer them. It's a school library.
Uh-huh.
They ask for the things that we are not providing for them, you know, because it's not proper, appropriate. Things they like to take out are Baby Mouse and Hannah Montana and all of these things that they see on related to TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I disagree with the fact that kids, you know, just get them reading. I think that you should protect their innocence, keep them innocent as long as possible, keep them wholesome, get them a solid foundation in the classics before they start going off into things that are inappropriate for them.
But what if they're not taking those classics out? And I guess I'd ask why they aren't. Maybe Anne of Green Gables is just too old for kids today, but is there good literature not out there that they can take home and be excited about more?
There is wonderful literature out there, but the older books, the classics, the covers aren't as flashy to them. They don't jump out. They may be a little bit more, battered or worn out or something, so they don't want it. Even if I'll say, I read this book as a child, I tell you this is a great book, and they just aren't interested.
Well, it's going to be hard for the older books to compete on the cover with Gossip Girl. I mean, you got bustiers and everything kind of popping out in all directions here. It's a sexual revolution.
But I think if you can get them with a solid foundation in classics, then they will be more selective. You know, if they don't read classic novels, classic children's novels now, the window's going to close. They'll never go back to them. Do you know what I mean? So, and it is impacting our society.
Yeah,
moral degradation.
One time only, and if we miss it, where do we go? Cecily, what do you say? Janet Maslin points out in her review that your girls in Gossip Girl, they're always referencing Oscar Wilde and Hemingway and Shakespeare and Goethe and Tolstoy. But, you know, the next thing you know, they're hooking up or talking about hooking up or betraying or backstabbing or whatever. Are you filling the window that ought to be filled by, Hemingway?
Well, I really think that there's, you know, you can do both. You can read the classics and you can read Gossip Girl. And Gossip Girl does reference every single book I wrote. I reference all of the books that I loved to read when I was a teenager. I read the classics. And there was, you know, like Sweet Valley High and that sort of thing, but I didn't read those sorts of books. The characters in Gossip Girl are intelligent, thinking human beings, and they're presented as very flawed. So when girls are reading Gossip Girl for pleasure, which is fantastic that they are reading, as Brooks pointed out, they're not putting them down and thinking, oh, I want to do exactly the same thing Serena and Blair just did, because Serena and Blair they're falling on their faces every other chapter. And they're also not thinking, oh, I need to get a hot, you know, jock boyfriend, just like, I don't know, and in fact, there aren't any hot jock boys in Gossip Girl, because they're also presented as being really flawed. And I think we need to give readers of these books more credit than this.
But what about the marinating argument that Jean Brooks Gunn and others are making here, that if it's, you know, if it's Gossip Girl front to back, top to bottom, you know, hours a week between maybe books and the TV show and similar books, is there no point at which you as a creator begin to wonder if you've, you know, invented a Frankenstein here that sort of eats up the time and attention?
I mean, they're reading the classics in school. And the other thing is that if they're, I really resisted as a teenager, I still resist being told what to do. And I resist books that have a very obvious message in them. I really believe that at any age, the more you know, the more you know, and the better equipped you are to make your own choices and decide who you are. And I really believe that censoring anything just causes you to rebel. So I think, you know, it's incredible that kids have access to so much information right now, much more than we ever had. But at the same time, I spent hours in front of the television watching Fantasy Island and The Love Boat when I was 10 and 11.
Not so much vomit in the hair and sex in the men's room.
Lots of sex, though. Lots of sex.
Let me go to Addie Schwartz. Addie, you've got themes, deliberate themes in your book. I mean, and you've got lots of writers behind the Beacon Street Girls series who bring these to bear, but they talk about the consequences of lying and good and bad rules and boundaries and fair play. You're very deliberate in the good message. Cecily says, look, what teenager is going to read that? Give them something that they can dive into. That they're not going to go with the top-down teaching of values.
First of all, we have an important formula, and that is to, number one, make the stories entertaining and fun. And the other listener that called in said something about kids not reading as much.
Well, Maura, who volunteers in the school library.
Yeah, and, you know, we just aren't attacking the books, you know, girls through the stories. We're attacking them online, too, with BeaconStreetGirls.com, where we're trying to create this virtual junior high and make it come to life. But it's all about making it cool and making it fun. And just because Buried in the Hot Fudge Sundae is messages based on research to help girls navigate adolescence, why is that a bad thing? The girls love the stories. They gravitate to the online world where you can make your own locker. You know, girls want to read something that they can identify with and characters that they can connect to.
But can your books compete with books like Gossip Girl, where, you know, everyone's wearing the latest fashion, going around in the limos, living the luxe life, and getting really down and dirty sexually, drugs, and all the rest? Can you compete?
Well, I think sex sells, but goodness sells too. And we've seen it over and over again. I mean, it is always the case. I mean, American Girl is a $700 million business. And
American Girl doll. That
American
Doll
and
books and all
books
the rest.
And there is great room for all kinds of alternatives. It's not just one or the other. I don't believe in censorship, but I do believe that there's room for focusing and offering girls something that's positive that they can take away and feel better about themselves. Mm. Where are you going to get the messages that there's, you know, it's okay to be smart, it's okay to be blonde, you know, it's not okay if you're not blonde, thin, or beautiful, and to feel good about who you are, irrespective of what you have, you know, what socioeconomic background you have. Mm. It's pretty hard. I mean, it's a fantasy life, the Gossip Girls, and it's fun, and it's, you know, exciting, and you go to big parties, and there's lots of intrigue and amazing fashion. But where is the importance of being a true friend, you know, reaching beyond yourself, giving back to your community, never giving up, and understanding that you're not perfect, that you make mistakes, which all our characters do. They're very flawed, but they're trying to make a difference, and we're trying to teach girls in a positive way.
A different approach, but a lot of very racy competition. Let's go to Brenda, calling from Acton, Massachusetts. Brenda, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was listening to your show and really interested because I have a daughter who just turned 16 years old.
Okay.
And she is going to have a birthday party.
Great.
First of all, she has dyslexia, and she's had a hard time reading all these years, and then she started to pick up the QuickBooks, which I was suspicious of, and that was a couple years ago.
What do you mean by QuickBooks?
No, QuickBooks.
Click.
Yeah,
right,
yeah. This is sort of like the Junior Gossip Girl series. Yeah.
Right, the Junior Gossip Girl. Mm-hmm. And so I was just thrilled that she was reading.
Mm-hmm.
She read all through those books, and then she started to pick up Gossip Girl. And she's read all through those books. So my thought is that I was just really happy that she was reading because it's the first time that I ever saw her with a book.
Sounds good.
Then we watch the TV show together, and that way I don't read the books, but that way I have a sense of who the characters are, and then we talk about it. The other thing is that in planning her 16th birthday, she's, I would say, a girly girl, but she's also really athletic.
Okay.
So the first thing she wanted to do was she wanted to have a laser tag party.
Okay.
And all of her friends thought that that was really stupid because they're, you know, 15, 16 years old.
That's juvenile. So
juvenile, but that's really what her first choice was.
Okay.
So then the next thing, so we're in negotiations. So the next thing she wants to do is she wants to rent a limo, and I'm not sure we're going to have the means to do any of this, but we talk about it.
Uh-huh.
She wants to rent a limo, get dressed up, and go into Boston and go have tea or dessert and rabble-rouse a little bit. So I was doing the laundry this morning.
So a limousine and a dress up and the cafe life.
Right. She wanted to do that.
Okay.
So we're looking up in Google, you know, Boston nightlife, under 18 clubs and all that other stuff.
So do you say, thank you, Gossip Girl, for bringing my daughter to reading, or no thanks because now she wants the limo life?
Well, I don't think she's going to get the limo life, but it was an aha moment when I realized that this was straight out of Gossip Girl. So I just thought it was kind of humorous.
Kind of funny. Are you still watching Gossip Girl with your daughter?
Yeah.
Do you cringe or do you say, oh, she's learning. She's learning the way of the world here. It's good for her. It's good fun.
I think that she's learning about a segment of the world, but I look at the characters and I look at the issues, and as much as I may not like the trappings, and they're not the trappings of our household, and what our values are, I still like the characters and the issues that they bring up in the show. And so we talk about it, and that way I can get by some of the other stuff. But some of the other stuff is the reality for kids who are 16, 17, and 18.
Or we make it a reality by putting on a platter in front of them. But yes, these are interesting girls. What kind of settings they're in? Maybe another story. Brenda, thanks for calling. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Here again is the actor Christina Ricci reading from Gossip Girl. It's an October day. The teen characters are cutting class, hanging out in Central Park, smoking an enormous joint, and gossiping about a girl who's been away for a while.
Hey, Nate, have you seen Serena Vanderwoodson yet? Jeremy asked. I heard she's back. Yeah, I saw her Monday, he said casually. What'd she look like? Charlie asked. I heard she got into all sorts of trouble at Hanover. Me too, Anthony said. I heard she got kicked out for having sex with this whole group of guys in a room. Charlie laughed. I heard she had a kid in France and left it there. Her parents are paying to have it raised in some fancy French convent.
Okay, fancy French convent and a bunch of guys. Let's go to Diane calling from Boston. Hi, Diane. You're on the air.
Hi there. I'm glad to talk to you. I'm the author of a book called So Sexy, So Soon.
Okay.
And a professor of child development as well.
This is Diane Levin, I see her.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Okay.
And I wanted to say that I'm concerned that some of the research about how all the sexualization of childhood and adolescence is really affecting girls. The American Psychological Association issued a report in 07 that talks about all the research that shows the effects on adolescents, such as increased eating disorders, increased problems about body image, increased levels of depression that come from girls not being able to live up to the standards of sex and sexiness and sexy bodies and being able to buy all the sexy products that are being marketed to them. So I just feel in the midst of all this discussion about is it okay or isn't it, we should really use what we know about the topic as well.
But what about the people who are saying, but at least my daughter is reading here, and, you know, these are not unintelligent books. My daughter's going to read between the lines, sort of figure life out, see this as a distant fantasy, not her own life.
Well, I think Beacon Street Girls and Addie's work really points to the fact that there are ways girls can be reading without that. And yes, it's definitely better for kids to be getting these messages in books rather than on TV shows, because in books they have to create their own images, whereas in TV shows it's done all for them. But I do think that the argument of that it's mostly people who market to children who use the argument that it gets them to read. I know you had a mother who said it helped her daughter, and there can be exceptions. But on the whole, child development people and reading experts don't necessarily say that. They say what they read and the lessons they're learning are an important part of their relationship to reading, and we need to think about how to create that.
Diane, thank you very much for calling in with that. Jean Brooks Gunn, what about your concern with the volume here, not just books, but the media saturation? How does that stand up, sort of that part of our culture versus what kids are getting from school and reading lists, presumably literature? I mean, we think of the important parts of our culture being conveyed through important and good literature. Now, how does the volume of that stack up to the volume of, Big Fat Joyce in Central Park and all that kind of stuff that's out there these days?
That's the crux of the problem. It really is a matter of degree and accumulation of images, and many people have been talking about that today. What we're seeing is if we can change the electronic media and portrayals, we have good research suggesting that does alter children's behavior. And we were given an example earlier about aggression. If we can reduce the amount of aggression and violence children see on TV, the same seems to be true in terms of sexual behavior, especially unprotected sex. It's also true in terms of product placement like cigarettes or alcohol in TV shows and in the different forms of media our kids get. So I really think we've got to separate out totally the issue of electronic media and the issue of reading.
But is reading
and literacy?
Is it like an entry drug here? I mean, if you're reading these books, aren't you going to want to watch them on TV and maybe vice versa?
There's no association between reading certain kinds of books and increasing your electronic media diet. In fact, there is almost no literature talking about the content of the books you read and kids' or teenagers' outcomes. All the research is on the electronic media. So when we argue amongst ourselves here, and parents out there are thinking about it, we don't have a good research base at all to say that reading certain content is related to particular kids' behaviors. That's why I'm taking the view, even though people are saying that's what advertisers or marketing people would do, that any reading that I can get kids to do would be a positive benefit. Why? Because overall in America, children are not reading for pleasure.
But let me just put the research aside for a moment. Do you really?
Sure.
There is literature that we think of as good, great, classic children's literature, and I'm sure great stuff is being written today. Do you really believe that it doesn't matter what's in there? Let's say it was straight up pornography, but they were reading. Would that still be better or than less reading? Does it really not matter what the content of the reading is to you?
Well, now, wait a minute. Of course, that's a very provocative statement. We don't know. We don't have good
research.
Really?
I mean, do you have to do a 1,000 years of research?
No, I would, but I wouldn't mind a year of research on the reading. Abby talked about the one interesting study at Duke. That's really the direction we need to go in terms of understanding content of reading. We're just light years ahead in looking at electronic media and the content, and we've learned that content there matters. So if you want, you could say, well, if it matters there, it probably matters in reading as well. But, you know, I'm a researcher. I'd say if you want to make those statements about reading, do research like the research that Abby was talking about that the Duke folks did. Do more of that.
Yeah, Cecily in Brooklyn, you're smart. You got a books out here which are great bestsellers, and they've gone off to be a big TV show. In a recent episode of the TV show, you've got Georgina in a hotel room with some cocaine and an addict named Pete. This is high school girl Georgina. And then she thinks that Serena, you know, might get frisky with Pete, so she puts a video camera in the room in hopes of recording a sex tape. Instead, you know, she spurns Pete, but he then does some more cocaine and starts foaming at the mouth and convulsing. Is this a runaway train, Cecily? Is this what you envisioned for America's Teenage Girls when you started writing Gossip Girl? Maybe it is.
Well, that particular scene is, it's in the TV show. It's not,
right.
It never happens in the books.
The TV show called Gossip Girl.
There are moments when I watch the show every week when it's on just to see what the mm-hmm. writers are doing. And sometimes I'm, you know, very happily entertained, and other times I'm sort of, you know, have my hands over my eyes. And I think that was actually one of those moments. I wanted to go back to what your last caller pointed out about, you know, girls having body image issues, eating disorders because of all the sort of sexy girl images that are being fed to them. And mm-hmm. what Gossip Girl, the books, one of them, the issues that I sort of slide in there without trying to, you know, in a subtle way, is that Blair has bulimia throughout the books. Mm-hmm. And I just present it in this way, where she's not going to get better by the end of the first book. It's something that she deals with throughout. Mm-hmm. And really, it's sort of a measure of how happy she is. When she's really unhappy and things are not going her way, she makes herself sick. And when things mm-hmm. are getting better and she's sort of more involved in school or she's happier with her friendships, then she does it less and less. And eventually she just sort of grows out of it. And to me, that was a very real portrayal. That was something that happened with my friends.
Right.
They didn't have to go to the hospital. They didn't die. But it was something that they struggled with all along. And I think, in a way, I think it's funny. I don't pretend to be an expert on teenagers. I'm a fiction writer.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a teenager once, and I remember how it feels. And I really try to show that in the books, and I try to show the characters dealing with the very real struggles that are sort of universal for all teenagers, and all that, the fashion and the talking about sex and the parties and all that. That just makes it attractive to girls. That's what brings girls to reading the books, but it's not why they stay with the books. They stay with the books because they relate to the characters.
And there's a lot of eye candy in there, at least when it gets to TV. But, no doubt, I can see how they'd relate, but you just can't help but wonder, is this what we have to offer our teenage girls? Let's go to Timothy in Alston, Massachusetts. Timothy, you're on the air.
Oh, hello, Tom. Great to be on the phone with you. I'm a little excited, so excuse me if I stumble.
No problem.
I feel like both sides of this this debate is kind of absurd. I mean, I can't really look at life and say that. You can't really say that sexual, you know, girls being promiscuous and boys being promiscuous in high school has never been a problem until now. It's always been a problem. And coming from a family with, you know, my mother was born when my grandmother was 16,
mm-hmm.
can't tell me it always hasn't been. And the other side is also absurd because, I mean, I watch these shows with my girlfriend and I laugh because they're so absurd. I mean, oh, I had sex with this guy, I had sex with that guy. I mean, it's all just quite absurd to me. And I think we should kind of ease back a little bit and realize that it's just part of life. And these things have always been problems and they're just a little over-dramatized on television.
The birds and bees are going to be there, but should we be feeding this to our teenage girls as their kind of very major media messages, Timothy? Is that just okay, too?
No, because I also feel like, you know, families have morals and values. And you know, my girlfriend watches this show, her sister watches this show, her friends watch this show. You know, these girls on these television shows really, they don't rub, I don't see them rubbing off on the youth of America now. I see them as, like, families have their own values that they give to their children, and I feel like they rebel at some ages, but they always have those values.
So families stronger than the media message. Maybe, Timothy, maybe. Let's get a call from Nashville, Tennessee, and Kay. Kay, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Good to be with you.
You too. What do you know, Kay?
Let me say, first of all, I'm so pleased that you are addressing this issue on your program today. I have three daughters. My oldest is 15. And we have kind of come to a point where after getting into this type of reading for a little while and then stepping back and saying, hey, what are the effects that this is having on you as a early teenager, on your friends? And I have been able to observe just in the behavior of my daughter's friends, the way that they speak, the way they speak about others, the way that they sort of see themselves, and how they have begun to be cliquish themselves in their behavior, and just the excitement that they feel to take on more mature behaviors at a very young age, because they are, as you know, the eating analogy is just perfect, because they're being fed this type of information that tells them, hey, this is really where life is at now, and it's okay because the world's changing. And
so you see them picking these characters up as role models, or in, you know, weighing them and saying, no, I don't want to be like that, or maybe this but not that?
For the most part, I see that the girls that are reading them do see them as role models. And my daughter and I had a little period where we had to really go round and round about it. And I said, I can see a change in your behavior. I can see a change in your friends. And I want you to really look at it yourself and be honest with yourself. You know, they're calling their mothers names that are, you know, not only inappropriate, they're just, you know, offensive. And mm-hmm. They're feeling that if they don't have a $300 purse that's different than the one that they brought to school 2 days ago, that they're really, you know, not keeping pace. And I just think it's over the top.
Our time is short, but we've got your perspective loud and clear, and I appreciate it. Eddie Schwartz, how are you doing in pushing the other way on this? Your Beacon Street girls, that, you know, they're out there with messages of responsibility and healthy living and positive body image, and they're deliberately sewn into the narratives of your stories. Do you see our culture pushing that, celebrating that, or does it just lean the other way?
Well, I think there's room for the Beacon Street girls in our larger society, but it's not just about reading, Tom. It's about the media overall and the messages that are bombarding girls, not only on television and the internet and in books. It's on billboards, Paris Hilton, Britney Spears. Look at the role models that girls are looking at and the messages that are being translated to them. And
Newsweek had this cover story that talked about prostitutes, kind of a jokey, but not really funny.
And celebutantes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't want to be painted as this person and this company that's all about, you know, good for you, and that we're, you know, we're pushing messages and we're heavy-handed.
Because that doesn't sell, or?
No, because that's not what girls mm-hmm. will respond to.
Mm-hmm.
Girls will respond to great stories
mm-hmm.
and great characters and issues that they're facing, that they are facing themselves. We are all about seventh grade and middle school and the trials and tribulations of growing up, and there's romance and everything that you think of that sticky time between toys and boys. But, you know, does everything have to be, you know, the pedal to the metal, the sex, the overdrive? There should be alternatives, and parents should be looking for alternatives to supplement the media that's out there. And whether it be in books, whether it be online, it's important to, and the studies show, that it really makes a difference what your kids are consuming on media.
Cecily, you got us started with Gossip Girl here. When and if you have your own daughters, you're going to raise them on Gossip Girl?
I have a daughter, and she's 6 years old. And she's incredibly curious about Gossip Girl because it's sort of, you know, everywhere in
the house. It's mom's project, yeah.
And I'm sure she'll read the books probably when she's a little bit younger than the age they're intended for. They're really intended for 15-year-olds and up. But because they're everywhere, she'll read them. And I mean, sort of like one of your last callers, it's an opening for a discussion. You know, the caller was talking about how she started to read the books and they watched the show together. She and her daughter watched the show together. And they're talking about all of this. And that's a gift that I couldn't have predicted. I think
it's a wild opening. We're out of time. Cecily Vonsegaser, creator of Gossip Girl, thank you for being with us today. Addie Schwartz, creator of the Beacon Street Girls series, and Jean Brooks Gunn, thanks to you all for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.